Welcome, everybody, into the Call the Podcast, recording Thursday, June 4th, at the bottom of the 4 o'clock hour. I'm Alex Barth, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered, as always, by LNS Media. So obviously, a lot going on right now. So let's just start off by saying first, Lebowitz, that, you know, in the wake of what's happened to George Floyd, countless tragedies across the country, and the resulting protests, we see you, we hear you. You know, I would encourage everybody, if you're not already, go online, read about it, be part of the discussion, sign petitions, all of that. But, you know, you and me, we're both came from, you know, predominantly white Northeastern towns. So I would say neither one of us is the right person to have the discussion that really is the most important discussion in the country right now. So I will just leave my thoughts at that and encourage everybody to take part in the conversation. So,
yeah, I think what it comes down to is just personal accountability. And if everyone, you know, tries to be conscious of maybe subconscious biases or how there are certain unfair practices, you know, in our world, in our country, then we can start to edge towards equality. And that's the important thing. I'd also urge people to donate to causes that they deem appropriate in times like these. Protesting is always great. Peacefully protesting is always an awesome thing. I think it's the most American thing you can do. So do that, obviously, but also try to, you know, give to causes that will help this problem. And obviously there are people who are doing that. There are great organizations that have come out, you know, despite the horrible things that have gone on in our country. But yeah, it's just, you try to remain optimistic that we can get through this and, you know, just try to get better on a personal level. So that's about it.
Yeah. I'll add real quick. Obviously, like I said, we're not really the two people to have the discussion because we've never experienced a lot of what's being talked about, but Couch Guy Podcast is another CLNS podcast. Mike Molyneux works for CLNS. He's part of the Patriots coverage. I think he does some Red Sox coverage as well, hosts the Double M Media Podcast. He was on with the Couch Guy Podcast guys the other day. I want to say it was Tuesday. It was Tuesday or Wednesday. But at Couch Guy Podcast on Twitter, you can check that episode out. They did a really good job. If that's the conversation you're looking for, and I implore everybody to go and listen to it. We're going to get into, you know, as this all happened, some sports news has started to trickle out. We're going to get into that. We're going to put the NFL aside here, Lebowitz, because their reentry plan is a little different, right? They were not playing when everything shut down. They missed some offseason workouts, certainly, but their real big first event is training camp, and it looks like that may actually start on time. So we're going to put the NFL aside. Obviously, they're going to have a plan. The biggest league of the four, there's going to be a lot of talk about there, but we can talk about that another time. I want to talk about the three leagues that actually had to stop games because of this. I want to talk about the NBA, the NHL, and the MLB. And news coming out Wednesday into Thursday, the NBA has a plan. The NHL has a plan. They have, like, legitimate plans to come back at the end of July, finish the seasons with, you know, a brief regular season, in air quotes, couple games to finish out the seeding and then get into the playoffs. Meanwhile, baseball is kind of just treading water. You know, that may be nice to the people in charge to say they're treading water in the world of baseball. It is ugly. It is bad. No, nothing is being done. Let's start with the good, though, Lebowitz. Let's start with the NBA and the NHL. Slightly different plans, but the idea is more or less the same. Bubble cities, there's going to be a few games played. The NBA is doing 8. I think the NHL is, instead of a real regular season, having some of the lower seeds play each other to decide who makes the real playoffs. And then they'll get into it. They'll get into, you know, 8 seeds, separating the conferences, everything. Your overall thoughts on those two plans first before we nitpick?
Well, I'm excited that sports is going to come back, even if it is an abbreviated version of what we're used to seeing. I think the efforts made by both leagues seem appropriate. They seem as fair as possible. And I think that it was, you know, put together in a way that will come out with a legitimate winner. The one problem you have when you start going into this territory, which is unprecedented, is you're going to have people call the question legitimacy of success for season. I think both of these plans make it so that shouldn't, that will happen inevitably, but that it won't be warranted. Because everyone's going to be on an even playing field. You're going to have, enough of a chance for teams to prove whether they are good enough to get to where they want to or whether they are not. And it just seems like it'll be fun and entertaining because we'll get right into the action. Teams will be rusty. Players will be rusty, but overall it's going to be great competition. And I'm looking forward to it.
You know, it's interesting you bring up the point of the legitimacy of the titles, because I've heard people argue the other way, that to have your season stop dead cold, to go through the emotional trauma of it'll amount to, I think, like 4 months, 5 months, and then just start right back up in top competition, like to start right back up and go right into the playoffs, not have that much of a ramp up. I mean, that is arguably a bigger challenge than the linear season. So it's definitely different, and there will always be something about these titles that's a little different. But, I was sort of on the team for a while of wanting to see things just canceled and then pick up. I do like these plans. I think these are better plans. I was worried about them, like trying to finish out the 82-game season, you know, baseball trying to fit in 162 games. I think this is a good happy medium. The one thing from a sports point of view, because there's two issues I have with both of these plans. There's a sports issue and a real world issue. We'll start with the sports issue. Obviously not as serious, but it's legitimate. So the NBA, I think they said they're going to play the finals in, what was it, October, right?
October 18th, I think it's going to be like the last game of that. Yeah, it's the supposed last game of the season.
It's right here on my phone. Free agency was mid-October. That's what I was thinking. But it's going to go into October, right? It's going to go deep into the fall. And then their plan is to start on December 1st to start the 2020-2021 season. So you're pushing it back 2 months, right? What happens to the next season and the season after that? Because, and I said this at the beginning, when everything shut down, would you rather just have one season bagged and that's it, or have two, three, even four seasons faltered? They've said they want to start December 1st. My question is, okay, are you starting December 1st and playing 60 games and finishing in mid-June like you traditionally do? Are you starting December 1st and then finishing in August? And then does the next season start in November, or is this just the new NBA calendar, right? That's what I want to know, because it's not fair. And I know they've had a lot of time off here, but it's not really time off. It's not fair to these players and these teams to give them a 2 month off season. You have to work in free agency. You have to work in the draft. You have to have training camps. You have to have summer league. There's just certain things you need to do in between the season that you don't have enough time to do going from October to December. And maybe in 1 year, yeah, there'd be effects. But if it's just 1 year and then they get back to it and they shorten next season, fine. It is what it is. Again, nothing's going to be perfect at this point. But what is the plan there?
So I think we've seen it already with the NBA. They want to move their season. They want to start in December or January and go into August. There's various people within the NBA who have expressed the desire to do so. If anything, this just puts the pressure on them to make that a reality. And I think a lot of people would be okay with it because, you know, the dock days of summer, there's not much going on. It'd be great if instead of, you know, midseason baseball, you had some playoff basketball to watch. The NBA.
I always like that we had some time off. Future. I always like that we had a little time off.
We'll still have football. We'll have some NHL, but instead of, you know, the summer, or it will be, you know, a bit of a split. So the summer, it's not going to be as action packed as other seasons. But you'll have that, you know, mid fall when the NFL is, you know, in the middle of its season and the NHL is just picking up and the MLB is done. So maybe the changes. But who's going to really complain? Ideally, I do like just having baseball, but I'm a baseball fan. I still think having basketball at that time of the year will be a lot of fun. And sometimes in August, you don't want to go outside. So, you know, bring it on. I think that it would be a welcome change. I do wonder if they do that, you know, NCAA, college basketball, that's going to have a completely different schedule. What will the implications be of that? I think you're right in questioning this. This is going to change the NBA, not for the next 2-3 years. I think this is going to change the NBA, you know, forever. We're going to see some differences come out of this, and that might not be exclusive.
Well, the other thing is, we still have you there.
The implications are huge. Yep, I'm here.
Dropped out for a second. Okay. The other thing, and yeah, I know the NBA has wanted to move their season back. Look, I liked, especially, you know, if the Red Sox are good, the summer's fun. But if the Red Sox are bad, you also get a little breather from sports until training camp starts. I liked it. You know, you had three sports going on at once. I always enjoyed that. I understand the NBA wants to move back. They don't want to compete with the NFL. That makes sense. Hockey, though, you can't play hockey in July and August.
No.
You can't do it. So, you know, are they going to stay in their window? And again, how do they operate with the shorter offseason? Because I would say hockey more than basketball, you need that break in between. So what I would, if I'm those leagues, I just, you know, I shorten, you know, the 2020 to 2021 season to me is going to be 60 games. You start December 1st, you end when you normally end. That's how I would do that.
Go ahead. We also, and this is might be nitpicking here, but the Olympics, I mean, basketball, if you're going to be playing into August, might be tough for some players who want to play internationally.
The NBA's been trying to get their players out of the Olympics, though, for years.
So that would, yeah, as they should want to. Right. And yeah, so we'll see what happens there. But that also throws kind of a wrench in those plans.
So here's my non-sports issue with it. And it involves testing. And I haven't seen the numbers for the NBA yet. I would assume that they're slightly lower, but in the same ballpark as the NHL. The NHL said to accomplish their plan, the plan they have to get through the end of the Stanley Cup Finals, they're going to need about 30,000 tests. Now, if the NHL's saying 30, it's probably closer to 60, let's be honest. Should the NHL, does the NHL have the right, and the NBA too, but we'll stick with the NHL because they've given us the number. Does the NHL have the right to pull 30 to 60,000 tests off the market for athletes? We testing is tight, right? We know that. There's not enough tests to go around, and this is still a problem, and it's going to flare back up. We've had people, and I have no problem with the protests, but people are not social distancing. They're not necessarily wearing masks. You also just are going to have a natural second wave when the fall starts. Do the leagues have a right to pull those tests off the market when we're going to need them for the general populace, to keep the general populace safe? And then I see people say, well, the leagues are investing in their own tests. Okay, these are multi-million, in some case, multi-billion dollar leagues. Why couldn't they just do that in general? Or why can't they manufacture more tests than they need? Like, yeah, I guess my thesis would be, we all want entertainment. Is it worth taking tests that people need, that we need to keep people safe? Is it worth taking like 60,000, 30,000? That's not an insignificant number.
So I will say this. I think that the further along we get into this pandemic, the more accessible testing is. I can tell you from a personal experience, I was able to book an appointment and get a test within the same day. And I think that it is much more accessible now than it was, which will make it much easier for not only these leagues to get the tests that they need, but, you know, the average person in this country, which is a good thing. Another thing is, we don't necessarily know that a second wave is coming. You look at a lot of information coming out now on the coronavirus. In Italy, they have had barely any positive test for the coronavirus. Last week, you remember that video that came out in Arizona, Lake Ozark or whatever it's called? It was that club in which people were piled up on top of each other in the pools. And it had to have been hundreds of people all within 3 feet of each other. And I saw an article today that none of those people have test positive for the coronavirus. I saw that too.
That wasn't true. There was one person who tested positive for it there that we know of.
Okay, one person.
But if there was one, there's going to be more. You also had Florida yesterday, June 3rd, have their highest tests in over a month, the most new positive tests in over a month in Florida. So, I mean, it's been different in different places based on how they handled it.
Yes. And so, but I do think that there are test available for people, and that these organizations, there will be no moral qualms with them obtaining these tests, hopefully. Because we've been going through this. We're entering month three of this pandemic. Really month five or six globally.
I mean, it's going to be the third month really in the U.S. soon. The start date I've been using is March 11th. Yes. That's the day
when Rudy Gobert.
Right. That was that day when they canceled the Jazz game and all of that. Like, that's the day I've been using So yeah. That's next week.
So I think they'll be able to do that. And I think they'll be able to do it in a decent manner.
Okay. I still don't know. I think, you're also putting, if they're staying at hotels, you're putting the hotel workers at risk. Do those people get tests? Are they included in that 30,000? The arena workers, the equipment staff, are they included in that 30,000? You're going to have a TV crew there. That's not a small amount of people. You got to have camera operators. You got to have people in the truck, all of that. Like, are these people included, or are they just kind of left at their own risk? And how does that work? They might have a plan for it. I don't know. We haven't seen it yet. We have to see it. But, people say, it's just 23 players in the case of the NHL. Oh, it's just 13 players. What the hell could go wrong? But, it's 13 players. It's five coaches. It's two or three trainers. It's a TV crew of 10 to 15 people. And then you got to remember, for every team too, you're multiplying that times 20 something. So it's people don't realize how many people go into putting in a sporting event, even without fans. When you factor in the arena operation stuff that needs to get done, because you still need the scoreboard, you still need the public address announcer, you still need that sort of thing. You need locker room attendants, you need all that. You're going to have trainers. You have the coaches, you have ball boys, all of it. Maybe they can cut down on some of that. But people don't realize how many people go into putting on a sporting event.
Yeah. And this is also a reason why they should probably try to get this going as soon as possible. Because I do think, and even Dr. Fauci, he said, a second wave isn't inevitable. It's not something that is destined to happen regardless of what we do. You can dispute some of the numbers, but it seems like as the weather gets warmer, the virus becomes less contagious, which is a good thing. So I think that's more of a reason to if you are going to do this, to try to get it done as fast as possible. It seems like the end of July is kind of the start date for at least the NBA. So I think that they should still go for it. I think there are ways to safely do it. I think you should probably have guidelines for these players in regard to, what their routine is when they're not playing, so that they're not.
You're trying to keep professional athletes on a quarantine or a curfew or a guideline. That's not going to go well.
Well, I think that you can try to restrict what they do to some extent for the safety of other players, safety of the staff that's working these events. And it's something they'll have to sign on to. That's easier said than done, as you're pointing out. But I think a lot of states are kind of going that route anyway. So we'll see. I'm biased. I'll fully admit that. I want them to start. I'm trying to convince myself that it will be okay. But I also, deep down, I'm thinking about this. I do try to look at it from an objective standpoint as much as possible. I think that they can pull it off. I think they can pull it off in a safe way. I also think, just to bring full circle, we've had millions of people throughout this country gather over the past week, as we've all seen. I want to see the impact of that from the virus standpoint. And I know that's not what people have at the forefront right now, but for the sake of where this country can go moving forward, forget about sports, just in general of in regard to reopening the economy, that's going to be relevant information. So we'll see. But I think in the next week we'll have, an exact answer, and this stuff will be nailed down for maybe all three or four leagues.
We also need, so that's the good. That's in, good in, I've seen it described, there's no good plan right now to bring these leagues back, different degrees of bad, but it seems like they've done okay. They're making progress, which is good. Then you have baseball, which is in trouble. There's no way to sugarcoat it. It's in trouble. They agreed on the prorated salary, both players and owners, at the beginning of this, and that was fine. That made sense. And the owners come back with a second offer where the players need to take a bigger cut without them taking a cut, which is bananas by the owners. I side with the players on this. And normally what happens in these CBA negotiations, most of these owners have other revenue streams coming in. That's true across all sports. And the players don't, obviously. And the owners can just kind of wait the players out. And players' associations, players' unions generally don't win these battles. The baseball players are standing up. They're saying, kill the sport. It's on you. We're not going to take a deal that's not fair for us just so you can line your pockets more than us. And good for them. And the owners tried to spin it. The owners hooked a lot of people into thinking this is the players' fault. And people bought it hook, line, and sinker. Why should the players take a second pay cut? Why should the players take a second pay cut without the owners taking one? Why should the players take a third pay cut, which was proposed at one point, without the owners taking a second. At that point, you go into the next CBA negotiation blindfolded. You might as well. So let me start this off by saying good on the MLB players, and I support them. That being said, baseball's in real trouble here. The NBA, obviously, they could have afforded to cancel their season, just pick back up. That's a global phenomenon. They're popular around the planet. They would have been okay. It would have hurt, but they would have ultimately been okay. Hockey, they don't have quite the same popularity or monetary influx as basketball, but they're very popular where they are popular, right? Canada, the Northeast United States, the Great Lakes. They've been growing as a sport. Would have hurt, but I think they would have been okay. The one league that could not afford to cancel, like flat out cancel, is baseball. And that's what they're going to do. And I look at the landscape, and you have the NBA, like we talked about earlier, possibly moving into the summer. You have the NHL gaining in popularity. The NFL, as strong as it has ever been and showing no sign of slowing down. And baseball, all of a sudden, with these incredibly high payrolls with no salary cap and the owners just heads in the sand, that sport is in trouble. It's not going to go away. It's not going to permanently go away. It's not like they're never going to play baseball again. But if they don't play this year, I wouldn't be surprised if in 5 years we're talking about the three major sports and Major League Baseball is like the MLS or Major League Lacrosse. I would not be surprised if they become a niche sport like that. Look, the MLS even figured it out. They have a plan to get back. I would not be shocked if they don't figure something out. And I don't think they will. That based on the reports, I don't have any inside information, but based on the reports, I don't think they will. And it's getting really nasty between the players and the owners. And that's just on the surface with the current major league players. Forget how the minor leaguers are being treated right now and what's going to happen when they step up to the bargaining table. I would not be shocked if Major League Baseball becomes a niche sport. 10 teams, they play a 60-game season. It's on, you know, channel 856 or, you know, you got to watch the games online. And I would not be shocked if that's what it becomes. It certainly feels like that's the direction things are heading.
I don't think it's going to get to that point. I think it makes
more money.
What's going
to stop it from getting to that point? Let me ask you.
Let's be honest. I think the MLB, if I'm not mistaken, I believe they bring in more money per year, and this has a lot to do with playing 162 games, than the NBA does, let alone the NHL.
But they also have the highest cost of operation, the non-salary cap.
Sure.
They pay their players an insane amount of money. And yes, they bring in more. But here's the thing. They bring in more gate than any other league.
Yes.
Gate? People buying tickets, going to the games is 50%. The NBA is going to be, like, even when the NBA comes back, and I'm not talking about the playoff thing. I'm talking about when we start the 2020-2021 season, December 1st. If there's 25% of fans in the stands, they're lucky. If there's any fans at all, it's going to be 25%, and that's lucky.
Yeah.
The NBA can survive that. Baseball cannot survive 25% capacity. And, yes, a lot of teams play at 25% capacity. How are those teams doing? How many players can those teams play? How many superstars play in those markets? How popular are those teams? Once people can't go to baseball games, and also they get a pretty good TV contract because they're the only thing on in the summer. Mm-hmm. If the NBA moves to the summer and they lose that TV contract and they lose a substantial amount of the gate, what happened? There's no growth of the game anymore. You put on top of that, they're getting rid of a number of minor league teams in these smaller markets. The games are so expensive, the major league games now. A lot of kids, the next generation of fans is introduced at the minor league level, and they're eliminating that. They are eliminating their biggest ambassador to the game. When you factor all that in, Lebowitz, I have to ask you, how does baseball not take a major step back?
And side note, that's another really sad part of this. A team that you've worked for, that, you know, in a city that I've worked in, the Little Spinners, they're probably done. This is probably going to be their last season before the minor league baseball.
I think breaking news, somebody who works with, I've heard nothing from them. And, there's been no communication from them about any plan to have a season. Opening day is supposed to be in 14 days.
Yeah.
I don't see how they have a season.
If they do, it's going to be very abbreviated. And for the Spinners, it will probably be their last regardless. Or last year was their last season if they don't end up playing this year. It's very sad. And I think, you know, that's part of what plays into this in regard to the impatience from the players. You look at the NBA. NBA players have problems with their owners, with the owners of those teams. That's obvious if you, you know, followed the league over the past 5-10 years. But at the very least, they're marketed it in such a great way that they're getting the money that they deserved. They're getting the endorsements that are very profitable for them. No, NBA.
I lost track of you there for a second.
I'm saying the NBA, at the very least, those players have problems with the team's owners, but they're marketed in a great way. The MLB, it seems that at every corner, they're shooting themselves in the foot, and they're helping, you know, destroy the popularity of the game, and they're not really, you know, promoting their product the way that they should, and you know, minor league baseball absolutely plays into that, and just the way that they treat their players in general that we're seeing right now is sort of playing into that. I'll also add, I don't like players going public complaining about this sort of thing. I think it's in bad taste when you have over 40 million people who are unemployed right now. But
I think that's a valid point.
From acknowledging the point that on their part?
It's a valid point. No, it's a valid point that 40 million people are out of work and, you know, they're complaining about millions of dollars. That's fine. But we also live in a free market economy. And if that's what, you know, maybe this isn't the way to look at it, but I'm not necessarily looking at the exact dollar amount, but these guys were agreed to be paid a certain amount. The market sets their skill set at that value. Why should they take less? Regardless of what the dollar amount is, it's a standard cost of living thing. They've been living a certain way because they've been being paid a certain way. You start making 50% less than what you were going to. I mean, that's not easy for anybody.
And I don't think it's even about that as much as it's about just, you know, representing players and the Players Association, which is part of their obligation. You need to make sure that future generations of players in this league are not going to get shafted by the owners. And right now they feel they're taking advantage of, which on paper they are. Forget about the figures. This is a slap in the face for them when you boil down all the facts. So I understand why they're making a stink about it, but you know, I didn't like Blake Snell going about it the way that he did. I don't like players going online and complaining about it. I think the way to do it is to try to fight behind the scenes and just, you know, be very staunch, stay in your territory, dig your heels in, and you know, just try to get what you're owed. And they have the money to outlast this. I understand the cost of living thing, but they do have the money to outlast this. This isn't about money, I don't think. You look at what David Price has done, you know, his charitable endeavors during this whole thing. It's not about money. It's about just trying to get what they're owed and standing up towards to owners that, you know, in comparison, make them look poor. So I get it. I respect it. I you know, when you boil it down, I respect it.
And, you know, like you said, it doesn't look great that they're complaining about millions of dollars when 40 million people are out of work. But the owners made that was all a PR ploy by the owners. The owners have been controlling this like puppets from the top. And like I said earlier, it's so rare. It's so rare you see a Players Association win one. I don't know if I've seen it in my lifetime. At least, you know, since I've been old enough to understand what a player negotiation and collective bargaining agreement and all that is, I don't, you know, the last NFL CBA, the one they signed a couple months ago that was hailed as, you know, a legacy win for the players, I didn't think that was that great. The one before that was awful, right? The baseball CBA, they've managed to keep the salary cap out. That's pretty much the only win they have. Their schedule is absolutely brutal. Yeah, the NBA won a couple years ago that resulted in, and it was like 10 years ago now, actually, that resulted in lost games. I don't think I've ever truly seen a players union pick up a win, like an actual unquestioned win. And good for the baseball, but good for the baseball union for trying to get one. And you know what? They're risking killing their sport. They're risking losing it. And that's how you know how important it is. And let me be clear. Yes, the players could agree to pay for less money. They'd ultimately be fine financially and move on. But they're going to keep getting beaten around. You know, you're going to lose the large number of minor league teams. Less people are going to have chances. They're going to – worse conditions, all that. They're standing up for themselves. Good for them.
Yeah, and just to bring this full circle, you talk about the owners not really budging and being stingy, which, you know, let's be honest, that's the reason why they're in the position to own teams. They're very frugal. They know how to manage money, and they'll stiff you if they need to. That's just a lot of these guys. But you've seen that again with minor league baseball. They can afford to keep these teams around. And I don't think that this situation that we're in right now with the MLB simply circulates around what's going on right now with the owners not wanting to pay them, you know, a fair wage for a shortened season. It's about everything. It's about the entire thing. And I think with the exception of the NFL, the MLB, their players probably have the best gripe. If you consider how many players play in that league and how when you're at the bottom tier, you're not being taken care of as much as you probably should. The irony in this situation is that the bottom tier players would be taken care of more fairly than, you know, the top rated players. Down the salary comparison.
I've heard that narrative.
It's true, though. You look at the breakdown. Major league
level, but this is what. This is, again, this is the narrative the owners are pushing. They're telling you, no, don't worry. We understand Mike Trout will be fine if he loses the money, but we need to do that so we can take care of the lower level players. They say that, and then they cut 30 minor leaguers. And they agree across the league that those guys are not free agents. They release from paying them, but they say they never served enough contract time to become true free agents. The lower level players are not the major leaguers making $800,000. The lower level players, the true lower level players, are the minor leaguers making $40 a week that now don't have a job and can't get another one in baseball.
But that's not going to be a priority.
Easily afforded. I know it's, but this is, I know it's not going to be a priority. But if the owners are really saying, well, our goal is to make sure that the players making less money are taken care of, that's not true. They're saying that so you think it, and they're kind of hoping that you just don't look at – they're putting the minor leagues behind a curtain. They're saying, See these guys who make the smallest amount of money, little asterisk, the least amount of money, little asterisk, in the league, we're taking care of them. And then you go down to the bottom, right, you read the whole user agreement, 15 pages down, the asterisk means does not include minor leaguers. If you include the minor leaguers, the owners are not taking care of the people who make the least amount of money.
There's also a point to be made that, you know, that's been going on forever. We don't need – you could play every game in the minor leagues, and those players are still going to be getting paid, you know, dirt.
Well, that was a huge issue before this, and this has kind of allowed the owners to expedite that process, which – I mean, that's a separate issue. And, you know, we can get into this more another time. But ultimately, yes, I'm very worried about baseball. I'll say it again. MLS, Major League Lacrosse, Major League Baseball.
I think you'll get down to NHL Major League Baseball, maybe. No,
you know how you have like the Power Five and the Group of Five, right, in college football, college basketball? You're going to have the Power Three. And then the group of three, maybe in the group of four, you throw WNBA in there. They were actually surging before all this happened.
Yeah.
You have the group of four, Major League Baseball is going to be right there. And I'm a big lacrosse guy. You know that. I'm a big lacrosse guy.
You're biased.
I don't really care for soccer. I'm a big lacrosse guy. No, I got into, I don't know. I wouldn't have stuck in lacrosse that long if I didn't like it. It's going to be right there with the Boston Cannons and the Boston Red Sox side by side. Get ready for it.
What about the Boston Lobsters?
That's tennis, right? Is that even – do they still exist?
I don't know. Who knows? But that's going to be the Red Sox in 5 years. According to Alex Barr.
Sure.
We'll see. The league's on the decline. This isn't going to help that cause. They need a resurgence. I think that's going to take marketable athletes over you know, contractual stuff. We'll see. This definitely isn't good for the game and, you know, good for the players for you know, standing up to these owners at the end of the day.
It's funny. I was watching I forget how I went down this rabbit hole. I was watching Ken Griffey Jr. I saw a Manny clip on Twitter. I went to watch Manny highlights, and I was watching Ken Griffey Jr. highlights, and just they have nothing like that in the league right now, and not even in terms of talent. Everybody was so locked on Griffey. And he played in small markets his whole career. He played in Seattle. He played in Cincinnati. Think about that. Played Seattle and Cincinnati. And I don't know if the league's seen that big of a star since. You can say what you will about Trout. You can say what you will about Harper. Did they have a sneaker? Did they have a video game named after them?
How many people do you think know who Jacob DeGrom is outside of, you know, baseball fans?
Yeah, no, like, not many.
Like the casual sports fan should probably know who Jacob DeGrom is. Probably. I mean, the guy has been the best pitcher in baseball the last three, four seasons. nobody knows him. Mike Trout, people know him, but no one knows what he sounds like. No one knows, you know, what his personality is, besides the fact that he's boring. They have a major problem there. And you know, the 90s, and I'd say the 2000s even, you had those guys. That's gone. That is, right. It is gone. And it is such a travesty. And you know, I don't think it's the players to be blamed for being boring. It's, you know, the league that's supposed to market those players that's failed to do so in the last decade. It's horrible.
All the get off my lawn baseball people. Like, you know, how dare any player show emotion, have fun, anything like that?
Yeah, it's brutal.
It's a problem. All right. Couple quick things before we wrap it up. We'll start on a lighter note. So we this was way back. It feels like 5 years ago now. I think it was 5 months. We talked about there were three movies coming out that we were excited for. The Irishman. What was the other one?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
No, that wasn't part of this. It was The Irishman, Breaking Bad, Bad movie, El Camino, and Uncut Gems are all coming out within like a month of each other. And we had a whole conversation about what you're looking forward to. And we discussed the first two. I did not see Uncut Gems until it came out on Netflix the other week. So I want to discuss it very briefly because it was basically 2.5 hours of me forgetting to breathe. And then I won't spoil the end, but I yelled. What happened?
It's incredible.
Movie, I loved it. I would never watch it again. Shot of it's like, myself again.
Yeah, there's a few movies that are in that territory, and Uncut Gems is absolutely one of them. It's like a roller coaster, but the entire ride going down. Like you're just. I think that's the best way to put it. You can't breathe. But it's so well done because it puts you in the mind of a gambling addict better than anything I've ever seen. We've seen movies about alcoholics. We've seen movies about drug addicts. We've seen movies about deviants outside of that realm. I've never seen a movie that relays what being that person is better than Uncut Gems, I don't think. It was just so tense. Kevin Garnett was incredible in it. I thought
he was
and
very
just,
good.
It was just
he
a
was
well.
Very good.
So you enjoyed it though. You liked it.
Oh no, I enjoyed it. I thought, you know, it was. There's so many things now where you watch those movies or TV shows and the same story. It's just told over and over again. Nobody has new ideas. I don't know if there's a movie I could compare to Uncut Gems.
There are a couple that I've heard of that I haven't seen. And I can't remember from like the early 2000s, late 90s.
But the point is like, it was fresh, you know, there weren't the typical tropes and this and that, whatever, you know, I was surprised a number of times during the movie.
It was very well done. So a couple questions. One, after seeing some of the movies that came out this past year, do you think Adam Sandler deserved to be nominated for an Oscar?
I don't watch a lot of movies when they first come out. I normally end up waiting a year or two. Mm-hmm. I just watch like HBO or Netflix, but he was really good in that movie.
Great Mike Francesa cameo as well. And okay, so
I was hoping there'd be a little more Mike Francesa.
He was good though. He was funny.
He was good. I wanted to see more of him. He was good. I wanted to see more of him.
So let me ask you last question in regard to this, to bring full circle. So we had El Camino, we had Uncut Gems, we had The Irishman. I want you to rank those three.
I think El Camino is third. I'm on the record. I didn't like El Camino. I thought it was unnecessary.
Uh-huh.
I think that, and this is kind of dancing around your question, I think that The Irishman was a better movie. You know, if I had to give out what was the best picture of the year, I'd give it to The Irishman. Which one was I more entertained by? I mean, Uncut Gems is just such a rush.
Yeah.
So I would say that was probably more entertaining. What was the better movie? The Irishman. That's another one. I don't know that I'd watch The Irishman again. I enjoyed it. It's an older show. You ever see The Newsroom with Jeff Daniels?
I haven't, but I know of it.
It's a good show. I loved it. I was binging the hell out of it. It's like staying up till 4 a.m. I would never watch it again. There's no shot I will watch it again. There's like individual scenes I might watch on YouTube if I'm feeling nostalgic for it, but some parts of it are just so intense, like so just emotionally draining. There's no way I'd watch it again.
So I feel that way with The Irishman. Or with Uncut Gems. With The Irishman, I would never watch it in full again. It's a type of movie.
Part
it's like
of it too, it's just too long.
It's like the Goodfellas. It's like Goodfellas. Well, I wouldn't put it in that category, but like,
no, I've watched Goodfellas at least 20 times during quarantine.
So like, I'll put the movie on in the middle of it. Like, it's one of those movies that if it's on cable, I'll start watching it. Like, I'll just watch it in the middle. I watch like till the commercial just to
See a little bit. Yeah. Oh, did we lose you again?
You know, tune in, see.
All right, Lebowitz, you there? All right, since this is cutting out, we'll see if he gets back. You back?
Yeah, I'm right here. Yep, can you hear me?
Yeah, since it's starting to cut out, there's one last thing I want to touch on here before we wrap up. You know, we talked about coronavirus earlier in the show. Obviously, you had – is it a firsthand encounter with it? I mean, you didn't have it, but –
My father had it.
I'm just curious if you just want to share like what that was like.
Yeah, so my father had it. It lasted about 2 weeks. He lost about 20 pounds. He didn't have much of the respiratory issue. He is more of, you know, he was achy. His head was throbbing. It was essentially the flu, but it lasted 2 weeks. It's not fun. He never had to be hospitalized, thank God. And a lot of people had it a lot worse than he did, not to downplay, you know, what he went through. But
how old is your dad? Ballpark?
He's turning 65 next month. So okay. he's in that risk area, but sure. He's a very healthy guy, works out every day. He eats well, he takes care of himself, which obviously helps with recovery, in this sort of thing, at least for the vast majority of people. So he was fine. My oldest brother got it from him, but he's largely asymptomatic. He's got a little bit of a cough, but very minor symptoms. And no one else in my house got it. And he came into contact with a lot of people. Thank God. Symptoms never manifested, or we were all tested. We all came back negative. So we're good to go in this house now. But it was a pretty tense 2 weeks. We're fine now.
Glad everybody's good. How was the test?
It wasn't, you know, we administered it ourselves. So we all went separately. I went in my own car. The line, so if you're, you know, Lowell, obviously the Cross Point building is right off of Lowell Connector.
Yeah.
You know, Industrial Ave. That's where they were doing it, in that parking lot. And I waited in line in my car for about an hour. A ton of people. This is on a Sunday. A ton of people. And then you swab your own nose. And it's not fun, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be.
Well, did you go? Are you sure you went all the way as far as you?
Yeah, no, my eyes watered, and you could feel it. But it's not like I think the strep throat test is a billion times worse, personally. And then
I had to get that all the time as a kid. That one, when they like shove the swab like all the way down your throat.
I had a real phobia about that. Like I never got it. Like,
I used to get strep like 2-3 times a year. It just became like a regular thing before I got my tonsils out. I got my tonsils out like fifth grade. Before that, I would legitimately get strep multiple times a year and I'd have to go get that test. I hated it. I thought that was part of life, that you just had to do that all the time.
I had a doctor. I knew that the shot in the butt threat was a lie, 'cause I refused to do it. And then my doctor was like, "You're going to get a shot in your butt if you don't take this." And then I called her bluff. And I never got the shot in the butt, never got the strep throat test either. So it went for me on that one. I think I'm fine now. Anyway, it wasn't that bad. And then you take the swabs, then you go and park in the parking lot, they designate a place, and they call you and they tell you your results about a half hour later on the phone. So this is a quick test, quick turnaround. And then they'll give you a physical copy. They'll keep it on your windshield and you go and grab it so that there's no contact. But
right.
Yeah, it was a, you know, a long wait, but a relatively easy process. So
there you go. I don't know. Is it a firsthand account? Yeah, firsthand account of dealing with coronavirus.
Secondhand, I guess.
Yeah,
I'm just shocked I didn't get it. I'm shocked I didn't, because my father made food for us like the 2 days. Like like he makes food every night. He's the one who cooks in the house.
You were in Houston where it was bad, and then you also flew back.
Houston's not as bad as here, though. Houston was a lot less severe than Massachusetts.
I just wonder if you encountered it somewhere you had the antibodies.
So when I flew back, I could have, because I mean, just a quick recap of my last 3 months. I flew into Houston. I flew in February 29th. Remember, it's a leap year. And that was kind of at the beginning of all this. So I could have theoretically been exposed then. I was on a crowded plane and a crowded air.
That's true, yeah. Oh, all right, Lovitz is dropping out again. So while he finishes that up, before he comes back, internet's been bad here. Last couple days, I just want to let everybody know that you can check out the Call on the Podcast on Twitter, at Call on the Podcast. You can find us online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. As sports kind of come back, we will be doing more shows, so keep an eye out. And, you know, unless the asteroid hits first, as well as Sewer Team Asteroid, we'll keep doing shows. So unfortunately, we couldn't get the end of level. It's a story, but the internet keeps cutting out, and I want to finish this before we lose the recording. So for Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening to the Call on the Podcast.